Live Line on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry, bringing you great savings on curtains and bedding. Available all year in store and online at harrycurry.com.
0818 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Live Line. And Joe at RTE.ie, Michael yesterday on the programme, as indeed with a lot of callers, has sparked a particular reaction. And Michael spoke about his 7 years in Fairy House. He's only a young child. And the physical abuse and sexual abuse. But that's the physical abuse has prompted a number of people to contact us. Paddy, good afternoon.
Hello, Joe. How are you?
Good. Tell us, you were 7 years of age when it started.
Yes, I'm 71 now, Joe. I was born in 1953.
Okay.
And I went to this school just around the corner from my house. We lived in a, you know, predominantly working class area,
yeah.
Corporation estate. And there was 12 classrooms in the school. But it was systemic in the school for beaten children. Absolutely systemic. With canes, with leather straps, and a dowel, like a piece of timber that would come out the side of a cot. And these were teachers who were, you know, we're only talking about children here, Joe, who are 8, 9, 10 years of age, where you would get 10 of those across the hand. And if you pulled your hand back, he'd tell you he's going to give you another 10 because he would be annoyed that he missed one of them. It was horrendous, absolutely horrendous. Sometimes you might get a clatter across the face with the bare hand and you would come up at least 6 inches out of your desk.
Okay.
There was times when, you know, you got such a beating on the hands that you wouldn't be able to hold a pen in your hand to do any writing. But yet, you would pick that pen up and mentally, you wouldn't want that man to break you. Because that's what they've done. In that school, it was horrendous. I used to sit and I would cry for other young children because that's all we were, Joe, were children.
Yeah, of course.
And I would say, how is he going to cope with that hiding? He done nothing wrong. He just doesn't understand. Some kids were brighter than others. You know, it was horrendous, Joe. Horrendous.
And was it... Who ran the school? I obviously don't know the name. I don't know the name. But was it a religious order or was it a...
No, it wasn't a religious order.
Okay.
It was run by the state.
Okay. One person that administered the punishment or were you sent upstairs?
Every one of them. You were told that... If you don't deal with this, you will be sent up to Mr. So-and-so up on top. Mm-hmm. Now, that man had a leather strap, Joe. And that leather strap was like something that would come off a tack for a horse.
Yeah.
It was about 12, 14 inches long. It was like if he had a specifically made. I'll never forget that strap.
And what about, did inspectors come into the school? Was there any, you say it was run directly by the state. Well, anyone from the department, run by the Department of Education, did anyone from the Department of Education come in?
They would only come in to look at the roll book to see who didn't show up for school.
Yeah.
And say, oh, he missed 4 days that month, he missed 6. Oh, they were allowed to miss, I don't know, so many days. But after that then, this guy would come in and you were brought away. You were brought to an institution somewhere, whether it was Arcane Boys School or wherever it was. There was one guy in particular that I know, and he came in one day, and he had no shoes, Joe. So his mother put on his sister's shoes. And when he got into the class, the teacher made a holy show of him for that. 8 years of age, Joe. So when I rang yesterday, and they said they'd ring you back today, your show.
Yeah.
I I said, I'm glad because I spoke to this individual. And I said, I said to the girl on your show, I said, listen, I was going to ring you back. She said, where are you? I said, yeah, because I'll tell you where I said. I did not want to let these down, these children, because that's where we were. I'm not talking about now as adults. I don't want to let all these children down. They can't read. Some of them can't read or even to this day. I said, and they're not ashamed of that. The mom said, just never be ashamed of that, ever. I said, you didn't let anyone down. The state has let us down.
Yeah.
And don't ever forget that, I said.
Did you ever bump into any of these teachers in your adult life? It's a small city we live in.
Some of them lived local. Some of them emigrated. You look at Joe, in them days, like, we were very poor.
I know.
There was no money in the country. Late 50s, early 60s.
55, 60 in a class.
You know yourself. Yeah. There was 8, 10, 12, 15 children to a home. Yeah. You know?
And did you ever, Paddy, tell anyone, any adult, about the physical abuse? The abuse?
Not really. I often mention it to my kids, you know.
What I mean is you didn't say it to your parents.
Oh, God, no. But you couldn't, Joe, you know. They'd say, there must be something wrong there, you know. He doesn't hit you for nothing. Like, I spoke to a brother of mine this morning about it. He was heading off to a wedding, and I told him he'd be on the guidelines. So he said, look, I'll never forget, he says. We were marched down for confessions. And he said, we were talking in the line as we were. Heading down to the school, and the teacher came back and said, stop that talking. So he said, the other lads kept talking. So he said, he came over to him and said, right, you, come into my classroom first thing Monday morning. He said, and I'll deal with you. So the brother said, I went in that morning, he says.
Mm-hmm.
The others didn't show up, but I went in. He said, he laid into me, that teacher. He said, so much so, he said, my hands were blue and the back of me nails were trodden.
Ah.
With the pain of this stick. Now, that's the way it would be, Joe. That would be standard for your fingertips to be trodden.
Yeah.
Did you ever catch your finger in a door?
Ah, stop.
Well, that's what it was like, Joe. Okay. That's the only way I can describe it. It was horrendous. And it was done in all the classrooms. They were all dishing it out.
Stay with us, Paddy. 0818 715 815. Joe at rt.ie 51551 is our text number. Jim, good afternoon. You're also want to remind people of the physical abuse you got in school.
Yes, how are you, Joe? Yeah, it was a typical country two-classroom school in the Midlands I went to.
Okay.
And all my brothers and sisters and friends were in it. And from around the same time as your previous caller there, I started school in 1959. And it went on through the 60s and the 70s. This guy was a lay teacher. And most of the time he spent beating kids. He would start off, he'd come in the morning in bad humour. We used to know by him. And he'd start off, boys or girls, if you didn't know this or if you made a mistake, you'd get a box in the head, pulled by the hair of the head out of the seat, brought up to the blackboard and made a show of, and you were told you were stupid and you were an F and this and you were this, that, the other. Now, it happened to boys and girls. He would grab the girls by the hair of the head and pull them around the classroom. And he had a ruler, I never seen one of them since, nor don't want to, with a steel edge in it. And he'd crack that down on the top of your head. He'd come up behind you, look in over your shoulder. And if anything was wrong in the copybook, you'd either get a box behind the ear with his fist, or you'd get this ruler on the top of the head. And you'd have a sore head for days after. And this went on a regular basis with him, shouting and roaring at kids at 8, from 8 years up to whatever time, 12 or 13, when you'd leave that classroom. Now, there was a lady teacher then that she took the first 3 or 4 years of young kids, like infants and that. And when you when we were in that classroom, we could hear him shouting up in his classroom. Yeah. And he'd come through, there was a middle room, he'd come through the middle room with somebody by the scruff of the neck, and he'd open the door and abuse the lady teacher about the class of ability of the kids that she was teaching, and then coming down to his class, cursing, swearing, and it all went on with him. He got away with it. I mean, it was a Catholic, run by the Catholic, it was a Catholic church. It was the parish priest would come in on the odd occasion, but.
And the parish priest was the patron of the school, the chairman of the school.
Yeah.
The church owned the land, the church owned the school. Yeah. Anyway, the state paid for everything. Yeah. But it was
on behalf of everybody, all the other students that I'm mentioning this, because I'm sure there was thousands of them all over the country.
Yeah.
And because of this other scandal that's going on, this is something that was never mentioned about that. Like, corporal punishment was there for somebody that would maybe be unruly. It wasn't there for kids that were struggling with their exam or with their lessons.
Right. It's completely it's illegal now. It's a crime to hit a child under any circumstance in the school. Yeah. But even listening there to Paddy, but the poor boy, what age was he, Paddy? Who came in his sister's shoes because he'd no shoes of his own, and he got ridiculed and beaten by the teacher because he's wearing his sister's shoes. Paddy, there's one line in your Paddy's about that that's really reverberating with a lot of people. They're about 10 of the best, and if you pulled your hand back in, you got another 10. If you pulled your hand back in, and there's one line, Jim, that jumps out at me from what you said earlier. You said crying was more common in our school among the children than laughing.
Absolutely.
That's shocking.
And I'd say anybody else would agree with me. Yeah, there was very little laughing in that school.
Crying was more common in our primary school than laughing.
Absolutely, it was. And young girls afraid, and boys as well. It was bad enough beating young fellas, but to beat girls like that and pull them around and abuse them verbally and pull them around by the hair of the head, like, it was just a disgrace what he was doing. And he got away with it. He went to his grave with it. And he's not the only one. There was community halls and GAA pitches and everything named after these animals. You know, it was just hypocrisy in Ireland at the time. And I think it's changing now, and it's not before time.
Yeah.
You know.
Was Paddy, you were young. As you said, you cried.
You cried watching
the other children crying after being beaten.
Yeah, I couldn't cry for myself. I could handle, mentally, I think I was stronger than a lot of the others.
Yeah.
And I would cry for them, because I would say, how is he going to cope? How can he handle that? It was horrendous, Joe, horrendous. They would wet themselves sitting in the seats. Some of them would have diarrhea.
Yeah.
Literally, they would have diarrhea. When I left at 13, I never, ever wanted to see another school again. Ever. Yeah. So you went out of a school with little or no education, and you started my journey in life then on building sites. And that's how I started my journey in life, Joe.
Okay, I'll come back to you, Joseph and Paddy. I really appreciate it. And Jim as well, because I'm going to Joseph now, actually. Joseph, good afternoon.
Hi, Joe, how are you?
Good, thanks. How are you?
Oh, not too bad. Just listening to these other poor guys. Jesus Christ, it's incredible what happened. I got the same thing in primary school as well, and in secondary school. Right through my education.
And you were another victim of Henry Maloney, Ghost father, who was moved from Billy to Jack and from country to country and school to school.
Yeah.
And then eventually confessed to the Vatican and was eventually convicted. What age were you, Joseph, when you were in St. Mary's?
12.
Did you tell anyone? Did you tell your parents?
No, nobody. I actually got to the point with Maloney that I wasn't going to put up with it any longer, and I hit him with a cricket bat.
And what was his response?
He fell on the floor, roaring. And I stupidly went down, sorry, father. And I just decided to get the hell out of there then. And I actually ran home. And I saw my mother was sick. I went to bed. My father came in. What's wrong with him? I said, he's sick. Well, he's going to school in the morning. And I actually didn't go back for another, I think it was nearly 2 weeks. Yeah. And I was in bed waiting for the phone to ring from the school to say that I hit a priest. No phone call. And I knew that he couldn't do anything.
He didn't report it?
No.
Did he rape you again?
Nope. He I stood up to him. He'd, in the corridor I used to be in early in the mornings, and he'd walk down and he'd hiss at me. And
hiss?
Hiss at me, yeah, hiss. Yeah.
What a juvenile thing to do.
Yeah. Swinging his keys on his long, you know, bunch of keys hanging off a rope off a soutane. Oh, he was an absolute animal. Yeah. He never came near me again.
Well, I walk backwards. Maloney was convicted in the year 2000 for sexually assaulting two boys at St. Mary's, where you were between 69 and 73. He was moved in 73 to another elite school, as they're called, run by the Spiritans in Sierra Leone, where he was also said, well, we also know he abused boys, and 12 boys stood up one day. In 1979, he was appointed to Blackrock College in Dublin, probably the most prestigious, my interjection here, probably the most prestigious school brand in the country. And I presume people are worried now about the brand of Blackrock. But anyway, he was appointed to Blackrock College in Dublin before being removed to Rockwell, another brand, in 1980, where he remained until he was removed in 1996 under strict supervision. Yeah. So between 27 years later, in 2009, Maloney was convicted of abusing two other boys at St. Mary's in between 69 and 73, and in 2015 was convicted of abusing a boy in Rockwell. He left the priesthood, confessed to the Vatican. He left the priesthood and because of his, well, he said ill health, and he left the priesthood. And he died 7 years. 7 years 21, later.
21, yeah.
Have you subsequently revealed, and also using the word subsequently, how have you been, Joseph, because of these rapes?
Oh, completely screwed up, Joe. Yeah. My whole life has been, my first marriage broke down, lost the house because of it. Changed jobs so many times. You go through phases of just darkness, suicidal tendencies. Sort of get up and brush yourself off and go again, and then it just something comes into you. You block it out. I blocked so much of it out. It was incredible. And all this coming out again now is just there is no closure. There never will be closure. I've gone for therapy, counselling, it doesn't work for me. I just don't think the counsellors, I don't think anybody who hasn't been a victim can't, in my opinion, can't treat, even though they're trained, they just can't treat these situations. Like, I still feel in many ways like a child. My childhood was taken away from me. You become very protective, you become devious. Everything in your life is not normal. My relationship with my mother failed, two of my brothers. How would I say? Like, I don't look forward to old age. I just feel I'm getting lonelier and lonelier all the time, even though I have family around me. But it's and in fairness, they've been very good. And when I came out last year and divulged what happened, in actual fact, I didn't divulge everything because I didn't say that I was raped by Maloney, and I just wish to God I had. And even the guard statement I made, I couldn't bring myself to do it. And I must say, the guard in question was unbelievable, very, very supportive, fantastic guy.
Then you also tell another story, Joseph, about father, another abuser, Arthur Carraher, and a priest, as you describe, a good priest. Who,
oh, God, an unbelievable man,
Well, tell us about this man who tried to expose Carraher.
Well, I met him in Africa, and through relations of mine. And I don't really want to say where it was, but it's just in Africa, okay? And I met him through my relations were involved in the church. My uncle was involved in the Catholic Men's Association. It's called the Gatinians. Mm-hmm. And this particular priest would say mass at their gatherings and come to people's houses. Okay. Like they'd have a braai. They'd have a braai on a Sunday and mass would be said. And I met this priest. And, the man had nothing. I mean, nothing. His clothes, he was disheveled. His clothes were in rags, like. And I don't know who supported him financially, but he ran a small seminary in Africa where he was... Mm-hmm. training up young African guys to be priests.
Yeah.
And one particular weekend, my relations were going to a wedding anniversary in South Africa, and they had forgotten that they'd invited him for lunch on the Sunday, and they asked me, would I mind having him for lunch? And I said, not at all, no. So I cooked, and he arrived, and he sat out in the veranda, got him a beer, and... like while dinner was cooking, we chatted away, and he said, I don't know much about you, and Joseph, and he said, where are you from? And I told him, and like what part of the country, and yeah, with your family, yeah, and where did you go to school? And I said, Mary's,
and
in my mind,
yeah,
and he said to me, did you know Carraher? And I said, I did, yeah, and what was that like? And I said, no problem, like, no problem. And then I said to him, did you know Maloney? And he said, yes. And he said, what was that like? And I said, yeah, all good, fine. I couldn't bring myself, I wanted to tell him. Mm-hmm. And then he said to me that he spent time in Canada, and he shared a dorm with Carraher. And... he said that that was the devil. That was the devil. And he reported Carraher to his superiors, I think right up to the highest you could go in the church, you know?
Yeah.
And that poor man was sent to Malawi, and Carraher stayed where he was.
So the whistleblower was banished?
Yeah. No, he was banished, yeah. And that's how I ended up meeting him in Africa. And he was in the chair trembling. I wanted to reach out and console him, but he was like shaking from head to toe. And it was like as though he'd taken a fit. And that man, with the work he was doing, and what he had, and I mean he had nothing, because I went down, there was a problem with his car, and I was asked to go down and have a look at it, as to where he was actually staying. It was in one of the tribal trust lands. And when I saw what they had, and I was offered a meal with himself and a couple of other lads, and he brought me down to his digs, as he called them. An iron bed, a mattress, I think one or two blankets on it, a worn-out pillow, a table and a chair, and some books. And a few clothes hanging up on the back of the door, and a pair of black shoes, and another pair of trainers, and a shaving gear and wash gear. And that was him. He was like a hermit in some ways. You know, I don't know how to describe it, but and All he saw was good in these people. And he was treated like a piece of dirt.
Joseph, stay with us, as is Paddy and Jim. Joe at rt.ie, 51551 is our text number.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
And Joe at rt.ie. Tom, good afternoon. You're listening to Paddy and indeed the other callers. Tom.
Good afternoon, Joe. Yeah, I was listening to that first gentleman you had on there. And you said, Paddy, I think he said he was 70 years of age.
Yeah.
Same age as myself. So I was just telling your interviewer there. I went to school around the same time. And all I could think about when I was listening to him was my poor mother dragging me up to school. And I hanging on to the gates of a house in the pouring rain and not wanting to go into school. And eventually she got me in.
Yeah.
And the teacher saying, "They're all right, mistress, we'll look after him. He'll be grand. And she was no sooner gone out the door when I was absolutely battered. Absolutely battered for putting my mother through it, one, and not wanting to come into school. In the same school, there was another teacher who actually used to pull down your trousers. Now, it never happened to me. Use a strap on you.
Yeah.
And this went on. And, of course, I was not going into the school. It was mitching. And eventually, like you were saying about the school inspector, all they were interested in was who didn't attend school.
Yeah.
And I have no shame in saying that I attended court and was given one last chance to go to school. So my mother tried everywhere, God help her and God rest her, to get me into a school in the locality, which she couldn't. And I ended up going to a school, and I think your teacher said it was okay to say, in East Wall, St. Joseph's.
Yeah,
absolutely fabulous school.
Yeah.
Fabulous. And to say it, like, the students there, everyone done well. You know what I mean? There was no... I couldn't believe the difference in the two schools and how I progressed up to my, as we used to do, the old certificate, and I passed, even having missed nearly a year and a half of school, my primary certificate, as it was known then. But they were absolutely fabulous. But when I think, like, I was shaking when I was listening to that man when he was saying to me, or when he was saying about how, the terror that they went through in that school. That's my story, Joe.
Well, Tom, the reason you didn't want to go to school and your poor mother had to drag you, so to speak, was because of what you were being beaten in the school.
Well, to put context on it, Joe, I loved school.
Okay.
As a kid, I loved school. And I was in school, and unfortunately I got ill and missed about 3 months of school.
Okay.
And they put me, it was the thing in those days, they put me back a class. And I unfortunately ended up with this teacher who from day one abused me in regards to corporal punishment. From day one, absolutely battered me. And it was through using the backs of your knuckles with the duster, the cane, the rod, whatever you like to call it. Anything that they could hurt you with, they used. And like, as I say, thank God, my mother's perseverance got me to a different school. Because I'm sure it'd have ended up in Dangan or the other place, you know, the boys' school, you know.
And just some of the, as you can imagine, the phone lines and the text lines are extremely busy.
I'd say there are people out there feeling like me, Joe, absolutely shaken.
Well, I'll just read out a few. I won't be able to get to all the callers. I'll read out some of the top lines from the callers, so to speak. In our school, Paddy, you're listening to this. In our school, we had another animal, as in our headmaster. He loved his bamboo cane. And today's show is bringing back all the memories. Another caller, the so-called Christian, the small C is intentional. Brothers beat us severely with letters, canes and their fists. Told us we were no good, useless, and would only be sweeping the roads with a shovel. The lay teachers were no better. I've been in St. John of God's Hospital with mental issues all my life, and hospital in acute psychiatric care many times over the years. I had electroconvulsive treatment, ECT, as a result of all the physical abuse and put-downs. No self-confidence as a result. No one shouted, stop. Joe, we had a brother, a Christian brother, obviously, used to get you to place your hand over one of the radiators before administering 10 of the best, as he called it, with a 16-inch leather strap. Your hand would slap down on the steel radiator with each slap that the brother would hit you with. Savage. The letters had a handle shape to grip it. Remember that these things were manufactured to inflict pain on children. Some, not all, of the teachers wore the letter like a weapon, which it was, in their pocket like a holster. Some were out and out sadists. I got the letter in primary school from Christian Brothers, and with a lump of wood in secondary school by a lay teacher. They are all living in huge houses, very wealthy people. They're in every town in Ireland. It affected lads for their whole lives. My own life was a mess. The teacher never touched the lads with well-off parents. A lay teacher in Cork hit me every day in primary school. Every day. He was an evil bee. Christian Brothers were all animals, no matter what anyone says. I'm devastated. I've never shared my story with anyone before. The pupil beatings that went on were unbelievable. Infants were beaten, and all beaten in the back of the legs. As we got older, the music teacher had his hands in our pockets. In secondary, the brother beat the daylights out of us with their letters. In third year, I organised the guys in my class to all fall on the floor in a sequence. One of the boys punched a brother back. He actually punched him in the face. And that's just an example. Eunan McCaughey. Eunan, good afternoon.
How are you doing, Joe? How are you?
Just good, thanks. Shook, but good. A number of things I've been doing, and a lot of people have been doing, and thankfully you've done it as well. What people may not realise, one, the current report, which was issued 700 pages plus appendices, five volumes, is about allegations of sexual abuse only in certain schools. And then the schools themselves supplied the information. The scoping inquiry didn't have the authority, or indeed the staff, to go into schools. So the schools themselves supplied the statistics. Now, you went to Westland Row CBS School in the centre of Dublin, and you looked it up.
Yeah.
You looked it up in the scoping. Yes. And what did you find?
The number of abusers, I think, was that's leaving my head now. Was in the 40s, I think, and the number of victims 11.
Okay, that's right. Yeah, alleged
victim. Okay, now. That is a gross underestimate. Wherever they got that figure, that is not that cannot be a correct figure. You know, I went through primary school and secondary school to my up to my intercert, as it was then, at that school, and we had Christian Brothers and lay teachers, but the Christian Brothers were the main the main disciplinarians. And if you've got a hiding from a Christian brother, you've got a hiding from a Christian brother. You know, the hidings, this is back in the mid to late 70s. Beatings were the norm. Everyone got a beating. You know what I mean? You just got a beating. That was it. Part of the school curriculum was beat a kid today, you know? But it's the other stuff that the Christian Brothers were up to that they should be exposed for. And brought into the spotlight for. Because they were cruel and they were wrong in what they did.
Yeah.
And as far as I'm concerned, they're getting off scot-free with this. What is it? They're not incorporated, or they're not corporated, or whatever. You cannot follow them. You have to follow the individual. You know, that's wrong.
I really appreciate people who are delving into this scope inquiry, because there's an awful lot in it, and the more and more people unearth, and as I said, the thing that struck me, and I spent a good bit of time going through the report, is these special schools, beginning in Lota, where there was an enormous number of abuse allegations and an enormous number of alleged abusers. And these were schools for so-called intellectually disabled orphans. They'd no orphans. Voice. Some of them literally had no voice. They could not speak.
It's horrendous to think what happened to them. But if you think about it, okay, take the victim, put the victim to a side because he's a victim. You cannot do anything about that victim. The perpetrator, put him in his box wherever he belongs. But the facilitators of that perpetrator should also be held accountable. The guys who manipulated the brother, priest, sister, whoever it was, and moved them around the country like pawns on a chessboard, you know. The game is up in Lota. Let's shift them up to Galway or wherever else.
I think they were all shifted to Lota from everywhere in the Brothers of Charity. Every abuser ended up in Lota because the children in Lota were regarded as being intellectually disabled.
They're not going to scream. They're not going to go back to their parents. They have the facility to deal with that, you know?
Okay.
If the facilitators of these guys should be held accountable, equally as accountable as the perpetrator.
Last night on Drive Time, Cormac O'Hara interviewed a powerful, powerful woman, Margaret Best. And this is the reason I want to play this clip is I want to remind people that Kenneth, who was her son, who was in Lota and suffered in Lota, Kenneth is a young man still. He's 55. And thankfully he's still alive and clings and loves and is safe within the warm embrace of his mother. But Kenneth is a young man and he was in this. This is not history. This is not history. This is contemporaneous for many people. This is Margaret talking to Cormac yesterday evening.
I went to the Brothers of Charity and I said, why was Kenneth like this and why is he being marked? And I got a response from one particular brother, well, you have to hit a bold child. His groin area was always of concern to me because that seemed to be the area was the most hurtful and difficult to. He couldn't complain, he couldn't cry out, he was obviously in severe pain.
Why could he not complain about these things?
Because he's nonverbal, he doesn't speak, so therefore there's no voice for him. You know, the only people to speak for him are his family. I saw one letter where an internal memo said, look, she's in again and we have to appear to be doing something just to keep the peace.
Yeah.
They saw me really as a, oh God, somebody to just get rid of. I was a nuisance. I was always in about something.
Margaret Best, you're not a nuisance. You're a heroine. Kenneth Best, you're not a nuisance. You're a hero. Before the break, 19 days after I was born in Shannadaron on Wednesday the 15th, 1956. Listen to this, our callers, John, James and Paddy, because the issue of corporal punishment was raised again and again in our parliament. And it was raised by one particular senator, Sheehy Skeffington. And he had tried to get corporal punishment banned completely, okay? And he failed. And one of the reasons he failed is these children were referred to by other legislators in our national parliament, okay? This is from the debate, from the Oireachtas debate. And Sheehy Skeffington then proposed, because he lost that, he had no hope of winning the corporal punishment for to be abolished. So then he said, can we begin by abolishing corporal punishment for little girls, because he knew he hadn't a hope. And he said, the reason, if I were to propose the abolition of corporal punishment for both boys and girls, because in the case of girls, there can be no valid argument about gangsters and little toughs and little hooligans, as sometimes is argued in relation to the beating of small boys, even small boys of 8.5, such as the one I mentioned in this parliament with reference to a County Clare case, I don't know the exact case. My view is that it ought not to be necessary for any teacher to have the right to give any form of corporal punishment to Irish girls. Remember, he's been trying to be strategic here to get to appeal to get Irish girls from 4 to 14 in our schools. I would regard it as basically bad educationally. Any teaching method upon corporal punishment, based upon corporal punishment, because of three conditions, it is wrong. It is based upon fear. It presents to the rest of the class, this is you, Paddy, I'm thinking of, to this edifying spectacle of a child being beaten by a grown-up, and in this argument, a girl at that. And there's a very powerful force of bad example given to children who see a small girl being slapped by a grown-up. Sometimes the younger the child, the younger the observing child, the more likely is the moral to be drawn by that. There is no shame need to be the argument, the moral that seemed to be he was worried about inculcating in children, that there would be no shame attached to hitting children smaller and weaker than yourself. The image, to my mind, Sheehy Skeffington, he's a senator, went on, of a man or a woman hitting a child with a stick is an unpleasant one. And the one which I think we ought at any rate in relation to girls, remember he's trying to be strategic here because he failed when he previously tried to get rid of corporal punishment. The kids were referred to as little toughs and little hooligans and little gangsters, 8-year-old kids. Be able to remove corporal punishment from our educational scene. This was being argued and defeated in our national parliament in February 1956. These arguments were there. These arguments were there and debated and defeated. And now we're told, anyway, we are where we are today, but in 1956, that was being said in our national, somebody making a plea again and again. Sheehy Skeffington did it. He was a lone voice. Again, a powerful voice. Again and again, trying to argue against corporal punishment. Back after this break. Joe at RT.ie.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
And Joe at RT.ie and 51551 is our text. William is on WhatsApp. William, good afternoon.
Hiya, Joe. How are you?
Good. But now, unusually, you were a worker in Blackrock College.
Yes, from that's 90. Right.
What age were you when you started working there, William?
I reckon I was about 14, as far as I can recall.
Okay.
And we went there through an agency who got from Carlow. An agency okay. In Carlow was able to get people working colleges and industrial places and stuff like that. And me and two brothers got working Blackrock College. Yeah.
And so what was your job?
My job was waitering. You started off as waitering on tables. You'd set up tables for the students and the priests. Yeah. And when they finished their breakfast, then you'd set up again for their lunch and then their afternoon tea and then supper. And it'd be all different setups. So you'd be flying around different tables with saucers. Another staff would come with knives and forks. Another staff would come with dinner plates or cups and saucers and all that. And if you finished down at the end table before other stuff was put out, you'd go up then maybe and you'd get cups after putting down plates and stuff. Yeah.
And
yeah.
I know you said through with agency, but
yeah,
what were you doing? How did you end up in Blackrock College as a servant at 14 years of age in 1973?
Yes, well, what happened? Well, it's a bit of a story. My father died in 1963. Yeah. My mother left us when we were small because she went into the town to the pubs, the little snugs at the time.
She went into the Klein.
She did, and she took to drink, and she went into the snugs. And we were never in school on a Friday. We always missed and went into search the pubs for the snugs to find our mother, and my mother eventually. Over time, because if we didn't go in and find her, it was the pension money, it was food for us. Yeah, it was, you know, the Beano, the Dandy, the Topper, and all that sort of stuff. Okay. And one day we went in, she was gone. She went homeless to Dublin City. Then my brother, an older brother, I can't mention too much, he seen an opportunity to take over the house and put the three of us out. Yeah. we were put out and had to fend for ourselves for a little bit. And then a woman got in touch with us and told us that's about agencies that got you working and got you a roof over your head in places.
Okay.
So that's how we ended up going through an agency, and we got brought to the college in a bus, a minibus. And that was it. We were there. I was there ever since that, for up to 82 or 3, I think it was 82. A lot of stuff happened in the meantime then in the college. My brothers went off. They couldn't take to the college, and they went off. They went to England to assist them.
Yeah.
My sister couldn't take us all, so I was left there. So that was me home.
At 14?
Yeah. That was my home. I lived in it, but then over a little while, I started getting abused, sexually abused by I'm going to say a priest, but it was a brother. It was you know, they wore the collar, the long gowns and all that. Yeah. A brother, yeah. And that brother raped me about a half dozen times over a period of time. And I couldn't say anything. There's a bit more to it, you know, yourself. They put it in, drain, they put it into your head that I'd be put out the next morning. If I said anything, I'd be on the street outside the next morning. If I was put outside Blackrock College the next morning, I had nowhere to go.
Yeah.
So I had to put up with what was happening to me. That was my roof. It was a bit of grub.
You know. Everything. You had no family at that stage.
I had nothing at that stage. I had no family to turn to. And I eventually got away from that man because I moved to the castle to the fifth and sixth year students.
Yeah, people who don't know Blackrock, it's a massive complex in South Dublin.
Oh, it's massive. Yeah. It starts at Boothersound, works its way up to Sion Hill School there. And comes out the back of Merion Avenue and everything. Yeah. It's huge. Anyway, so I moved to the castle, and I started waitering there as well. 54 students, 4 priests, 2 prefects. And I was happy enough there. And then the groundsman died, so I got work out on the grounds to get out and about onto the grounds, painting the goalpost and cutting the grass and putting the blue tips on the top of the poles, for, you know, the blue and white and at the college and
the rugby and all,
all that. And then the caretaker, I'm going to say staff person of another, of the junior part of the college, which was Willow Park, started abusing me as well. And I was, overall, between both of them, I was raped over a dozen times. So I've had a hard life up to now, and as they say, the icing on the cake, I hadn't seen my mother for years, didn't know if she was dead or alive or what.
Yeah.
I came in one night with a couple of drinks from Brady's pub across the road from the college. I only had to cross the road, and I was at the main gate.
Yeah.
It was after being snowing. And I seen, coming up through the start of the college, I seen the snow drift and fall a bit, and I seen cardboard. And I went over, and I looked under the cardboard, and I found my own mother trying to sleep. And I used to sneak her into the, she was freezing, she was shaking. And I used to sneak her into the college. In 54 students, 4 priests and 2 prefects, I sneaked her into my room in the castle. I sneaked her in the evenings, and I sneaked her out the next morning to the reception room as you come in the main door, and I let her on. I was only talking to her, and she came to see me. So eventually, over time, then she got a little house. Two prefects, two students, priests in Merion Avenue took a shine to her and helped her.
Great.
And they got her a little place in the North Circle Road. I used to go and see her.
Yeah.
And she eventually died. She got cancer. And she died. She was riddled with cancer.
And William, your mother, what did she know you were in Blackrock? I presume she did. Did she?
No, I don't think she did. Yeah. She didn't recall that she knew I was there. She used to go to different places. She would get sandwiches and tea in the blind asylum in Merion. She'd know a priest in Blackrock. She'd know someone else. And they used to get a couple of quid to see her about, see her on the road. She'd get coffee and tea, and then she was gone. And she was so used to that, I couldn't hold her down, you know. That was her life.
William, my
father died in 1963, so I think after that she was, you know, gone. And she had her hard times too in these schools and stuff like that. I also have a cousin in Carlow who has brought out a book called The Girl in the Tunnel, about the Madeleine homes, and she was on, she was taught in the Pat Kenny and that, but she helps me out a bit.
William, can I come back to this? You're 14 you're effectively an orphan. You're brought to Blackrock College through an agency to get a job. But did anyone in Blackrock College, given it's run by men of religion and Christianity, and did any of them say, did any of them take to, I mean, in a human way, not in a predatory way, those who raped you, but did any of them say, God, William, is there anything we can do to help you? When did you finish? What education have you got yourself? You've had a hard time.
No, not a thing. Not a thing about me past or anything like that, or how I became to be 14 or something. Not a thing. You were brought in, you started waiting on tables, you got your food, you had your little cubicles up at the back of the priest's house at the top of the hill, and they were just little cubicles, a bed, a locker, and a blanket. And that's what happened to me, up in my cubicles, up in the cubicle.
And when did you go to the Gardaí?
I went to the Gardaí in around 2021, when all this stuff started coming out about Mark Ryan and that. But it wasn't easy to go to the Gardaí. I can't say now what happened. I did do something bad. It was drummed into us. We wouldn't be believed. And it's happened today. Why is all these survivors only coming out in their 50s, 60s, 70s? Because it was drummed into them not to tell, not to say anything. And that still lived with us up to being elderly men. We were still afraid to say anything. And I did something bad, which I can't go into, and I was arrested, and I was taken. And then when I realised I was taken serious, I was able to come out with what happened to me.
Yeah.
And I did a 16-page statement to the Dundrum Gardaí, who was dealing with these historical abuses at the time. I done the scope and inquiry as well, man to man, in Fitzwilliam Square. And I don't know about this report that has come out, because I haven't received it. It's coming to me in the post, as far as I know. Yeah, so I can't comment too much on it. But this brother in the college, and this layman staff person are not named in these. Mm-hmm. So there are two new faces to that, but they have been named in some stuff I Googled.
Okay.
With other people.
And my understanding is both of them are deceased.
Yeah, one when the priest was being investigated, the brother, he was deceased, and the other man was a DDP, had been gone to DDP by this detective in Dundrum, and 2 weeks later that man died. So their hands were tied. That's them finished, the guards. Their hands were tied after that. That's what I was told. So that's me in a nutshell up to now. I was suicidal.
Yeah.
I was suicidal. I drove around in the car. I was suicidal. I had a rope in the car. I had a tree picked out. And I rang every free agency that I could, charity that I could think about, and no one got back to me up to this present day. I have been in with Insight Matters in Cable Street, and 1 in 4 up the Keys, and they saved me from suicide.
Right.
And I don't drink, smoke, or do drugs. And if I had, I wouldn't be here talking to you today. Yeah. That's for sure. So I have to say too that Focus Ireland at Temple Bar, Tom McBennett, they're excellent people as well.
Yeah.
They have helped me out very much.
You're an excellent person.
Well, I do try to be, but it's not easy. I'm reminded every day. I hear a bell ringing in the church, I'm reminded. I pass by a priest, or I pass by these people in O'Connell Street, they're doing Bible study at the wall and they're asking people. I pass by them no matter what distance. You look over, you see them, and this brings back everything. Even these shows, chatting and all that, just everything just comes back. We will never, regardless of what comes out of this report, financially or any other thing, our minds can't be erased of what happened to us.
Yeah,
we have this now for our life, and hopefully that this will help people in the future, in colleges and schools and students, because we had nothing. Now they have something. They have a tool. They have a tool now where we had nothing. Nothing. No one looked at us. No one. But I knew. I spoke to a man from Terranor, and he said if he told anything, he got in touch with me. He heard about me, and if he had told his mother, she would have killed him.
Yeah.
That's what he was told. And he threw himself in front of a car. He's all right today, but he threw himself in front of a car. He said if he told his mother, she would have killed him. And that's the hold they had on people in them days. They were the bosses. You done what they told you. You know, you're a good lad. You're a good boy. Don't, what are you crying for? You know, you're a good lad. You're working hard. As they were abusing you. You know, and you took that then in your stride, you know.
Yeah.
You think you were going to be promoted or something or moved up or something, you know. You think you were doing good by saying nothing. So,
William,
that's it, Joe.
You're doing good by speaking today.
Yeah, I've spoke to a lot of people.
You weren't
doing I actually, me counselling was... 90 euro every 2 weeks, and I have spoken to a spirit man from Blackrock College, who Liam Lally, who they have accepted everything I was told them at a meeting in the Royal Marine Hotel, which was hard, and they're paying my counselling fees.
Yeah, rightly so.
Which is little, but it's a help. It helps me.
Say with us, William. Paul.
I will, thanks.
Paul, good afternoon. You're listening to William and the other callers.
Good afternoon, Joe. Yeah.
You were a victim as well?
I was. Yeah. I was for a lot of years, yeah. Started off in National School, Joe. There was a lay teacher in National School, and he used to hammer me on a daily basis for nothing. And it was for nothing. But he frightened the life in me. And I was never any good in school after that. I couldn't learn. I was unable to learn. And I went from that school then. I went into a boarding school. And then the other abuse started. And... I'm 66 years old now.
Don't be sorry. Take your time.
Never.
Yeah.
I've never really spoken to anybody. Because while my mum and dad were alive, I never pursued this.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I am now.
Yeah.
Because it's time these people were exposed.
Yeah.
The school in the Midlands was horrendous, is the only way I can describe it. There was three priests in particular. One was a sexual abuser and a mental abuser, and the other were physical. Yeah. Physical and mental. And I'm scared.
Yeah.
We're all scared for life, Joe.
Sorry, William, come in there, yeah?
Yeah, we're all scared for life. When did you ever think you'd have grown men on your radio crying to you? You know? When did you ever think you'd have men 65 or 67 crying to you?
Go ahead, Paul. William is listening. Go ahead, Paul.
Go ahead, Paul.
Yeah, no, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to cut across you, William, there. I recently retired officially. Some years ago, I ended up with a brain tumour, and I got my life back that day. They saved my life. And it changed me. It changed my attitude towards life.
Okay.
My mother, God be good to her, she's only dead a couple of years, Joe, and she knew something had taken place. I left that school one night, ran away, and it was my dad that picked me up on the side of the road, and he asked me what I'd done, and he hit me a box. Because a priest wouldn't do that to you.
Yeah.
And, but he knew in his heart when we went back to the school, because he brought me straight back to the school. We sat in the parlour with the prior of the school, a namesake of my own. I'm not mentioning his name now. But he listened, and my dad was listening, and they kept me in the parlour, as they called it. And the priest that had beaten me so badly that night, and it turned out afterwards, Joe, that he beat me because I went into a dormitory and I asked one of the lads who had borrowed a pair of corduroy jeans belonging to me. I told him I needed them back. I wanted them for the next day. And he told me I was copying his voice, and he caught me. I had hair at the time, and he put his hands in my hair and he bit me up into the face all the way down the corridor. And it was a long corridor, believe me, when I was being beaten like that. And he hit me at the door of my dormitory, and he sent me across the bed, and I banged my head off the steel bar of my own bed.
Yeah.
And I ran away from school that night, and he's dead since. The sexual abuser is dead since, and that man left a huge estate after him, 800-something thousand euro. Yeah, I mean... Nice. How is that even possible? Like,
yeah. And Paul, are you receiving counselling today, or who do
I'm
you
not,
talk to?
Joe, yeah, I've never received proper counselling. I need it. There is no question.
Yeah.
But I am going down the law route right now, and I'm sure that. There will be counselling, but yeah, I've never sat down with anybody and what I'm doing to you right now.
Well, there is counselling available, Paul. I want you to stay listening, please. Have you anyone there with you? Anyone you can talk to this afternoon, or anyone that will you can have a cup of tea with? Or?
I've got friends around me. Yeah.
So don't worry. Stay with me. Just gather your breath, and I'll check in with you briefly after the break. Joe at rte.ie, 51551 text.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe Duffy.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
And William and Paul were talking to both of them off air, and with a view to proceeding, and William is very calm, and as you heard, very in his time of great hurt, very conscious of what help is available, and we're letting Paul know now what help is available. Just a couple of calls. I was in a little Protestant national school. One teacher was an older woman who, to this day, I can still smell the Valda jelly mints and the stale cigarettes off her. She had a selection of bamboo canes and absolutely bit the daylight out of us. In my first day in school, I sat beside my big brother who was minding me. He horrifically got caned by this witch. I could hear the flash of the cane on his poor little hands. She turned me off school for life. Growing up, my friend had his nose broken by the headmaster on his first day in secondary school. I got 32 slaps of a letter one day as an 8-year-old. Every morning you got 12 of the best. What an oxymoron. 12 of the best if you got your spellings wrong. I saw the head brother kick students on the ground, a 14-year-old who, in front of the class, who were ecstatically cheering their brother on, only to be disturbed by the teacher in the next classroom when he saw what was happening, retreated, saying, "Carry on there, brother." I saw a pupil on several occasions having his head brought down by the hair, then kneed in the face, then a quick left and right by the brother, and then thrown over the desk. The letter used to have copper coins are led in it at the end to give it more wallop. There was violence everywhere in the street, football matches, basketball, soccer, the schoolyard. In school, the headmaster used to beat the hands off us with a drumstick. Another teacher had a fiberglass fishing rod with the eyes taken off as a whip for us. He called it a trip to the moon. The teachers were evil that I came across. That's another caller. John Winston. John, good afternoon. Sorry for holding you and indeed so many other people for so long. John, you were in Dublin, in where you lived in Henrietta Street.
I did indeed, Joe. And I went to St. Mary's School.
Okay.
Christian Brothers.
In Dorset Street, isn't it?
In Dorset Street. Yeah, and before that, King's Inn Street. I mean, we were introduced to being abused there, like, you know what I mean? Forced with a ruler, you know, bang the paper on the head or pull your lock up. Stuff like that before you went to the Christian Brothers.
Yeah.
Now, I had two brothers ahead of me, Joe. But their introduction, the very first day in the Christian Brothers school, was the letter. We were introduced to the letter and we were told what we were going to get, a penny slap or a twopenny slap, depending on what it was that we'd done, you know. And by the time I was in fifth class, Joe, I was well used to the letter and the cane. Yeah. I mean, some of the lay teachers was the cane, you know. You were sent up to the Christian Brother, the head, the principal at that time, you know, I won't give his name. You got to off him up there in his office, you know. And he would punch you and whip you with that leather strap. You know, they were fierce times. But, like, in fifth class, there was always teachers' pets and things like that in the school. And I was a mitcher, Joe. I'll have to be honest with you.
Okay, a mitcher, yeah.
Because
fine.
I never went into school. I wasn't afraid of the teachers. I just learned nothing there. You were told you were stupid. You were told you were poor. You were looked at as if you were poor. I mean, when you wore plastic shoes and corporation glasses and you know, your brother's clothes, family downs, probably stuff that was too big for you. It was visible to them. They knew who to pick on and who not to pick on. But there were pets in the class. And one particular time, while we were in fifth class, one of these guys was kept behind after school. And myself and another guy got up onto the window to see what was going on.
One of the pupils was kept behind.
One of the pupils, he stayed behind. And as we looked in the window, Joe, I suppose the word I can use today is being spooned, tiddling him, or whatever the case was going on.
Yeah.
You know, in their minds at 10 years of age.
By a teacher, he was being molested.
Yeah. More than likely when I think about it today, because, you know.
You were only a child seeing this.
We were only children. We didn't understand what it was that was going on there. But we were seen at the window. He clapped us. And the next day we were brought up into the class. Well, we came into class for our normal day in school. And, of course, we would have told the other pupils,
of course,
what was going on. But we were called up in front of those pupils. And the leg of the chair was took off, Joe. And he belted us. When I spoke, Joe, about a guy hitting you on the hand, he made us hold out our hand. And he came up to the highest that he could get and down, but think him right down on, right to the floor at each stage. Now, we had tricks of when they were hitting me with the leather or the cane.
Yeah, you're trying.
Like which way to move your hand closer to him or whatever the case.
What age were you when you climbed up that drain pipe, saw a fellow pupil being abused, you didn't fully understand. What age were you? And then you were beaten on the following Monday with the leg of the chair. What age were you, John?
I was 10. I was 10 years of age, Joe. Okay. This is like fifth before. I mean, I made my confirmation at 11, which was in 60 year later. Yeah. But, Joe, that wasn't the only punishment. He okay. banished myself and that other guy out of the class. Yeah. And, Joe, when I say banished us, he put us out in the garden. It was created specifically for us. He created yeah. it to keep us out there.
Okay, say with me, John.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe Duffy!
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
I'm out of time, unfortunately. I hope the callers today, I hear from them, they are not out of courage and hope despite the horrific situation they have gone through and are going through. I hope they are not out of hope. I suspect they are not from the courage they brought from their reservoir today to speak. And above all, I hope all of us, and I include all of us, the survivors and those of us who are lucky enough, and luck is the word, not to have that inflicted on us. I hope all of us have the time, I know I have, and the energy to keep hearing these stories. And no doubt we will hear them over the next period here on Liveline. On sound, Harry Buckless, broadcast coordinator Shane Galvin, producer Owen McLaughlin, series producer Ned Egan. Ray Darcy is next.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Their new autumn range will leave you bursting with ideas. View in-store or at harrycurry.com.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815 or send your WhatsApp voice notes to 087 484 8888.